Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM and your drive time. We're always here to keep you company. Always here to give you some statistics you may or may not be interested in, but thank you very much for tuning in. All we care about is thank you very much for tuning in. I mean, just keep tuning in. If you are not interested in, one day you will find something that will catch your attention and we will start going,
And then continue.
Actually, tuning into Eagle FM.
Always.
Yeah, always.
You don't have a choice, guys.
No, you don't have a choice.
There is no choice. Mm-hmm. Just tune in.
Yeah, there is democracy everywhere. Except here we just,
We assume you gave us the power. We're sounding like the worst of the worst.
We'll make an excellent dictator.
That's just where we are.
Speaking of leadership, today's subject is one is that incorporates, it's one of one that's, I think that, one that can easily be classified as a social, except when you look at the significance, it contributes to pretty much everything around us. You begin to see that it features into all aspects of our lives because it literally has to do with that, and that is our life. Don't worry, we are not here to talk about Hamlet, to be or not to be. We're going to look at life from the global statistics that's looking at this should be fun. Let's talk about fertility now, shall we? Actually, this is my favorite. That's why I arrived here before you. Yeah.
Ah, my goodness. Helmut, you're starting to sound like some of the trainees that I'm training with.
Oh, yes.
Maybe. Some people, the one guy misunderstood, what was the thing's name? He misunderstood the PrEP medication what was the other thing? Because the one person was presenting about contraceptives, and then one of the audience members mistakes. What is the thing's name? For something completely different. And we were like, no, that's not contraceptive. I almost said ARV. It's not the ARVs. It's something else, man.
An ARV is a contraceptive. That'd be new.
Yeah. But we said, no, that's not. That's basically not. It was PrEP. It was PrEP because PrEP technically, well, in its own way, in its own right. But anyway, yeah, so don't get excited. We are here to dispense knowledge, please.
I know
I'm not a father yet.
Look, one thing we have to understand here is that, the subject of fertility is one that we don't talk about a lot for all kinds of reasons, for some religious, for some cultural or traditional, or just flat out uncomfortable, which that last one now I'm just not, I think features into both a cultural or, cultural or religious, point of view.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if we are looking at, if we are making plans, Agenda 2063, Agenda 2030, we want to build this sector to be this efficient, as much as we like to talk about the technology that, because we are now, I think one of the reasons that make, today's discussion, and that's basically, basically looks at, more like, how the global fertility statistics, where it is today, and if you can just use those numbers to sort of like make a future projection of where we're headed. With regards to the different demographies in terms of population, whether, how many people, for example, in 10 years, in 10 years globally are going to be over the age of, over the age of 60. That means they can, they don't have the physical strength to directly participate in economic activities the same way that they did, when they were, when they were waking up, every morning to go to work.
Yeah.
All these things have to be factored in. Now, I think this is where, this is where you start now asking questions like, why are we talking about this? Because every economy depends on a workforce.
Yeah.
You need a workforce.
Actually, this report builds on two previous reports that we spoke about.
Yeah.
Remember when you spoke about the World Happiness Report, and then and then we spoke about it in our one of our home run sessions after that,
yeah.
after one of your mind the gap sessions,
yeah.
and then we dissected the Human Development Index report, where we obviously looked at health and education that plays a factor for the happiness for the developmental factors for the world.
Mm-hmm.
The human, the World Happiness obviously cites, you know, who are the top X amount happiest countries.
Yeah.
Where did we find ourselves again? Was it 139? Or was it 93?
I think we're somewhere below 70.
Because in the Human Development Index report, we mm-hmm. were in the 130, 160 range of countries, thereabout.
Mm-hmm.
We were even below certain particular island nation states, in terms of the Human Development Index, but that's primarily based upon population proportions.
Yeah.
Namibia, we were still measured at a context of, or did we have the 3 million in that report? But it's between the estimation that they were working with, that's now the UN agencies and even the Bretton Woods agencies, that we were perceived at the 2.5, 2.4 million mark of people.
Mm.
And also that they looked at in terms of amount of years in school and amount of what was the school leaving age versus where we were supposed to finish school. And those two reports even built on the back of the labor force survey report of Namibia, where it cited that the higher the level of education of the person, the more economic opportunity the person has. And remember, we scaled between the earnings potential, the lowest earnings potential, which was like 1,000 a month, and then obviously the highest range that was cited, and I think that was a pretty astronomical amount. We won't mention it now.
Yeah, don't worry. We're still within the legally acquired one.
Yeah.
Not the one that ends up with you, you know, having to apply for bail.
And disclose all your particular assets as well. So we're not in that range. But we recognize that there are Namibians there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We mm-hmm. recognize that there
Had
are
to
Namibians.
Argue with that.
Yeah. We can't. It's just that they're a very small aspect.
Yeah.
But we recognize there are Namibians there. So if you look at those three reports I cited, Helmut, obviously the World Population Report brought out by the UNFPA, dear listeners, it's the 2025 edition. It came out a couple of days ago in that direction, you know. I think back in last week or this week, in August, in the month of August, they titled this report The Real Fertility Crisis.
Oh.
Because they were obviously looking at population numbers. They were obviously looking at birth discussions. They were obviously looking at the rate of replacement. So if you don't know what the rate of replacement is, dear listeners, the rate of replacement is how many people are born every day versus how many people pass away, how many people die every day. And you've got to look at the rate of replacement of those that obviously, you know, are declared deceased, how many people are born every day in order or per month to, you know, to sort of like keep a steady positive growth rate. Because they say, and if you use the word growth usually indicates positive movement
yeah.
in terms of population numbers. If you say decline, that there's a population decline, then it obviously means that there's a slower birth rate versus the amount of people passing away. It's interesting things because you also have to factor in that there are population movements, like people moving in and out of a country.
Yep.
People immigrating, people that are migrants, people that are refugees, people that are all those other particular labels that exist, obviously. Those are also factors that you've got to look at. And I'm actually going to start, Helmut, at the first, what's this thing's name? At the first, chapter that tries to reveal the real crisis. Now, it has three feature discussions in it. The layout is more like an article-based thing, but the report is 160 pages long. I don't know why they went for this particular, like, artistic feel of things. but it's to make it more human, or to provide the human element, because since we're talking about us humans, they're obviously looking at families, generations, and evolving views. And I'd actually like to start there. Do you know why, Helmut?
Views?
No, that first part under the first chapter, revealing the real crisis. I'd actually like to start there. Remember, we started once on the differences in terms of the baby boomers after the Second World War and the rest of the generations.
The number of kids they're willing to have?
Number of kids they're willing to have, access to job opportunities, access to various kinds of assistance mechanisms, or even access to various kinds of governmental services or local authority or public services and stuff like that, you know? Yeah. When I always start from that particular point of that example of that uncle of mine who explained to us the, you know, nephews and nieces of him.
The affordability spectrum.
He was not even married yet. He could have, at that stage, my aunt was not yet his wife, but they were living together already. They could have a baby. She could stay at home, look after the baby. He could go to work. He could afford the rent, buy the groceries, just on his salary. Even be able to pay for a car, meaning like installments regularly, and still have money to spare. And it was below what we think is very few back then in the 80s, was very much in the 80s. I think it was below 500 Rand. Because he said it was like 300 and something or 300 Rand like that. Which obviously shows you the economic position back then. Now, those are usually some of the arguments that many Namibians have used in the days, obviously when it's, you know, campaigning season here or in elections and stuff like that. You know, why can't the politicians and the policymakers find the means, the ways, apply the calculatable brain capacity to try and formulate a system that makes things accessible, cheap, and affordable for as many Namibians as possible. The downside is we have moved 35, 40 years in advance between that point where my uncle was and a whole bunch of other Namibians.
Yeah.
We've got an uncle here. He's our driver. We won't identify him, but he knows because he listens to us a lot. One of our colleagues.
Most likely, started working at the time when...
He did that job for 40 years of his life. He's still doing that job.
So,
could get a house in Karatura. Could get a, and at that stage, you just had to prove that you actually were married or that you had a partner.
Yeah.
And then you got the property and then you could build. You just had to prove that, dear listeners. Your name was put on a list and you got the property. You just had to prove that you were married.
What changed the increase in demand, inflation?
Obviously, independence came about. New country. Namibia tries to set its own particular destination, its own particular court chart, its own particular course. New economy, realizing there's a new consumer market, no longer considered as part of South Africa, but still being planned for by South Africa. And then something happened in terms of the business model that most of the local authorities had. For some reason, we started... I've never seen just bare, barren, dead land being valued at 500,000 Namibian dollars. I've never seen something like that. The trees have not even been moved or removed, but somehow I'm paying 500 grand for something that's got nothing on it. Then there is that the thing is not even connected to any services. And the services, I suspect in City of Windhoek's range here in its jurisdiction is 75,000. So now add that 75,000 on top of that 500 grand.
Ew.
And in between, like the last particular exercise that was done, so that was last year or the year before, real estate agents were used. So you've got middlemen who put on their commissions. And now you're even sitting like, why are you artificially creating a scenario that is not necessary? Could people just not go and purchase directly from you? Because the idea, the thinking there would obviously be that the local authority will anyway make money. They will anyway make money. Because the thing is, Helmut, the moment you build a house on something or put a structure on a piece of land, that structure cannot be removed and taken somewhere. It's not a caravan. It's not a it's not a portable home, you know, like, but the one they've got in the US, it's something that, it stands on stilts, but it actually has wheels.
Yeah.
It's not a portable home. It's literally a fixed, it's a fixed item. That's why it's known as fixed property, immovable property, the mm-hmm. term coming from law.
Yeah.
It's a fixed thing. It stands still. It can't move. I've never understand such logic. The scenario that should be the case for many people that don't own land in Namibia is charge them the connection fees. Pay the connection fee. Your name is on a list. You get allocated something. That system is there. And someone just has to monitor and evaluate that you don't try to duplicate your name. You try to have multiple properties. Because then you're technically trying to circumvent, undermine a process. And obviously, then ACC can do its thing, you know. ACC can come there and say, no. Show up with its cane going like, who wants 10 of the best here? You know, who wants to look black and blue at the same time? You know,
when Africa, Dwight, we don't do 10 of the best.
No, in Afrikaans, the adage is, you know, when the teachers used to, you know, sort of like dispense,
you know, yeah.
some sort of a discipline mechanism to ask the boys, the teacher would show up, wie succes van die bestes.
Mm-hmm.
So who won six of the best, you know, one of the six of the best strikes in your life? And then, you know, things were funny back then, you know.
Oh, it wasn't. If you were the one that, you know, if you were the receiving end.
If you were the first guy.
Oh,
and you were one of the recipients at the end of the lane, you would like, look at that guy. Look at these facial expressions. And until it's yours. And then everyone laughs at you as well. I know.
Eish.
Was a violent culture we lived in.
Yeah. Education.
Education was lovely back then. Uh-huh. Colorful and painful at the same time.
Yeah. An orthodox, you know, massage with the help. Very, very, very environmentally unfriendly
I think we have to get language police for some of the terms we are going to be using. Yeah. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the scene, Helmut. That specifically was the scene.
Okay, I think the reason why these subjects should sort of like be taken very seriously especially for developing countries is because, we are witnessing this taking place in a lot of developed countries.
Yeah.
I think if you look at it from developed countries' point of view, I'm like, you know, if you can just observe the direction developed countries have taken with regards to economic development, you can see that they have achieved a lot of their economic, economic plans that they said, which is a brilliant thing. The health sector is doing just fine. Education, perfect. And you look at the transport sector and everything is going just fine.
Mm.
Except, this is a system that needs constant maintenance for it to, be useful. Because if it's not maintained, there's no way it's going to serve the people that is, that it's intended to serve. That's where you are now, I feel like as developing countries, we have to take a few steps back and begin to figure out as early as possible ways to incentivize families, because we are going to do that anyway, whether we like it or not, because we can see countries like South Korea and Japan. They are already, they have already reached the point where they are trying to figure out ways to incentivize family and more like to motivate people to start getting married and start having kids, because they have a large population that's growing out of, you know, we're all growing old, and we're going to get to the point where we are not going to be as efficient of a workforce as we were, as we are right now. Now, what that means is that, for the services that are, you know, for services and basically, you know, the economy to run, those services are not going to take any excuse.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. So for us to keep running them, we have first have to start looking, at the main elephant in the room there. Like, why are people deciding not to have kids? As you can imagine, it's not a one size fits all. There are a lot of people that will tell you, some reason I want to be a priest.
Okay. In the first chapter, they technically do specify through the youth testimonials.
Yeah.
That, it's like a background theme,
yeah.
But it's a resonating similarity between all the testimonials they kept all the people anonymous now, supposedly.
Yeah.
So because it's not like I would know the person from Mexico, the young lady from Mexico.
Look, the thing is, there's someone from Mexico would be going, ha, neighbor. So it was you.
But yeah, so, it's not like I would know any of the people, but the overarching, the singular thread that you can pull through all the testimonies are one of, I either have a kid, but I don't want any more kids, because it's too expensive. I cannot have a kid because I'm struggling even to survive every day. Rent, meaning a roof over your head, is too high or is inaccessible or is unaffordable. Or there's a scenario of it's a couple, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yeah.
We had one kid and we are both struggling.
We're not having a kid anymore.
We're not having a kid.
So this is an anatomical issue.
It is. And it's a scenario based upon an economic impact.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched the interview specifically also digitally. One of the international news corporations interviewed the doctor who has the foreword in the report about, you know, why is this report titled The Real Fertility Crisis? Because they really went and looked at the things, the external factors that actually impact Namibians, which also comes through from people that I met this week, Hamut, who have said, and they have done themselves like HIV training mechanisms and the likes.
Yeah.
How they meet, and I'm sorry, guys, it's always my gender that I hear is at fault. I can't defend people that I don't know, whose personalities I don't know of.
Yeah.
But when you hear testimonies of a man saying, why must a condom will give him an allergic reaction, he's allergic to using a condom, and then voila, the woman is sits with a baby that he doesn't want to take responsibility for, you obviously understand why the sentiment becomes louder and louder and more obvious and more apparent. And then when a politician shows up and tells you, we need to stick to Vision 2030, and then all the women in the community say, hell no.
Nope.
You can have your own babies by yourself, because we have to struggle with the opposite gender who doesn't want to take responsibility for the fatherless children being born in the communities. It's a straightforward fact.
Yeah.
Hamut, there's nothing we can do. And when I say there's nothing we can do, it then falls on the heads of the lawmakers. The lawmakers then have to figure out ways in terms of the what was the thing that you mentioned? Japan and South Korea. The incentivization mechanisms. China's bringing out the same thing now. China launched a mechanism to compensate every parent for 500 yuan per year for every child below 5.
A country of 1.4 billion people have incentives in place.
They, you know why? It's because of the one-child policy. It was active for too long.
And then, you know what was the one of the dumbest problem they came? One of the dumbest part of that they came to realize.
Yeah.
Because I think of mostly cultural issues.
Yeah.
Most of the children that were basically had, who survived and basically were documented, were mostly male.
Yeah. And then they realized there's an imbalance of baby girls being born.
In any armed conflicts, the reason why women and children are always taken to safety, it's because that's the future of your generation. Yeah. That's the future of your race. That's the future of your tribe.
It's the same thing that happened in India also, ne?
Exactly.
Because of the caste system in India.
Oh, yeah.
The parents, if the parents realized the firstborn was a girl, the baby girl gets discarded. I'm sorry for using the word discarded, but I can't use
it. Because it's much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, look, the thing is, this is something that, that I didn't know until I think, sometimes last week when, one documentary I was watching, one narrator pointed out that, all throughout history, if you read a lot of basically wars that were fought basically on a large scale that are documented, you realize, especially with and one of the highly documented histories of the Romans, you see that every time that they attacked a village, they basically got rid of everyone, especially men. Mm. But women were mostly taken into captivity, and then I'll just leave the rest to your imagination. Now, children children were either taken, were either taken and, more like put through some training so that they can adopt the education system or basically ways of doing things of their of their new overlords or stuff. Mm. But, the best way, the reason why women and children have to be taken to safety in any armed conflict, it's because, it was, for a very long time that, that our species were, human beings were, were involved in a lot of conflicts. We quickly learned in our very evil ways that the best way to erase an entire generation, get rid of women and children. Mm. That generation is done. That race is done. Mm. Yeah. So, now, and that's a, there's a very simple biological explanation for that. One man can have kids with five women. Mm. That's not possible with one woman, with one woman when it comes to basically the continuation of, continuation of a species. So, every time that we put a lot of emphasis on let's build an economy. And I think, a lot of developed countries made that exact same mistake that a lot of developing countries like us is making to this day. We're just hell bent on let's build this economy. But who is going to run it in the next 50, 60 years?
Yeah.
We didn't think that through. We're not thinking that through. Commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back. So when it comes to incentivizing families, the reason I think if you look at it from a developed country's perspective, is that The more an economy grows, I think, you don't have to be an expert to figure out that the more busy the people becomes. So, if you live in an economy where people are working day in, day out, they don't have time for, there's a reason why they call it honeymoon. They said, they don't have time for vacations. They don't have time for their families. Well, guess what? No one is going to decide to have, take, for example, five children like, their parents and grandparents did. Mm. Because the schedule today is super tight.
It's not just the schedule today. It's also a scenario of, the affordability component.
Yeah.
There was a theory I had back, like in my first years on university, because at that stage, one of my friends and his girlfriend, they became parents just immediately. And then I stood there looking at, like, because I was still first year university. He was first year distance learning university. She was first year university as well, but they were like high school
sweethearts.
High school sweethearts, mm-hmm. From the previous year. And I stood there going, like, so, you guys couldn't wait to first finish your studies, get steady, become stable, move in, and then have the kid? Because they weren't like living together, cohabitating. They were like just dating, still living each other's parents as 19-year-olds or 20-year-olds, and then had the kid. Hey. And the reason why I asked that particular question to them, and it was a Saturday night, and I was just having like a, like a insightful discussion, human to human engagement, because my best friend at the time, the boyfriend, he always had a scenario of differences with his dad. He would always tell me, like, when we were in high school, how, because he's the only son, because he's got two small sisters after him, he was the only son, and then, his dad would sometimes, like, put extra pressure on him to, one or other role, and he would always feel like he was slightly being bullied in the scenario. And I just stood there going, like, you do know, one of my thoughts was firstly, but I asked something else, you do know that potentially you might be kicked out of the house for, already having a kid with your girlfriend, or expecting a kid from your girlfriend. But the scenario obviously went in a different direction from the assumption, but they were still at the end of that year, had to move in together because then she gave birth and then, you know, they had to marry then the next year after the child was born. So in a particular nutshell, in that scenario, you can even see in this report, the other particular underlying theme was the impact of unplanned pregnancies, specifically between couples or even for women, you know, in that particular scenario, because many of the women's testimonies cite, I now see how expensive a kid is. I'm not going to have another kid.
Yeah, I'm not having another one.
Straightforward. If it's a couple, they say just our firstborn's birth, it's an impact on our finances. It's an impact on our schedules, our personal lives. We have to completely pivot and rotate and
make a lot of changes.
Make a lot of amendments in the same, just, you know, for this new little human that we both created.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got to adjust. But the downside is here, Helmut. If you look at the societies that the baby boomers lived under and the society we live under today, back then, the birth of a child, the union of two people, was sort of like applauded, was the ultimate pinnacle in society in terms of this is how the society moves forward.
Yeah.
Values, cultures get transferred.
Like the future generation.
Like you cited a little bit earlier before the ad break. There's stability factors identified. Yes. Stable households, you know, inverted commas, stable. Because then you go find out the guy is a woman beater or he's a domestic abuser. I'm sorry, guys, but it really does happen. We hear of those examples. And then, you know, it leads to a divorce and then you sit with an anomaly. Because like in the US, the thing that has been trending for the past 4 or 5 years after COVID has been the US divorce rates. Same rates that come up in the European zone. Men, you've heard most of that trend. Men don't want to date anymore in the US or in the Western world.
Yeah.
Because firstly, they're afraid, firstly, of being accused of sexual harassment in some cases if you are deemed to be not the most attractive looking man.
Mm-hmm.
Second scenario is potentially that you understand that all the women want specific men in the bracket of dating.
Yeah.
And if you're below that bracket or outside of that bracket, you are going to struggle a little bit more to find a partner. And thirdly, that if you do find a partner, the threat is always what you've built up can be taken away just as quickly.
In the event of a divorce.
In the event of a divorce. And you see these reoccurring themes. It's one of the things that, what's his name? Jordan Peterson began on. I have now completely disregarded him. I know he is a highly valued psychology academic. I have stayed away from his particular perspectives because in many cases, it seems like you can see things don't match in a Namibian context or even in an African context. So I've just gone like, okay, disregard whatever knowledge he's sharing. Certain things are generalized because we are human.
Yeah.
But in certain things, it just doesn't make sense in a Namibian context. So I completely just disregarded any particular knowledge from that. I can't factor it in because I'm dealing with a different human here in Africa. I'm dealing with different people. So on that basis, the aspects obviously has been different dynamics in societies. I mean, one of the things that the report highlights here, Helmut, specifically is that they start off in that the revealing the real crisis, chapter one. They start off by saying the world is transforming at a breathtaking scale and pace. Citing global fertility rates are declining. The human population is projected to reach its crest within the century, meaning within this next 100 years, from 2000 to
2100.
To 2100. Within this 100 years, we will peak the human population on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's projected, then we decline.
Now that's a very, that's observable even today, because you can see that, the place where the peak is taking place, I think that also helps to explain the economic activities boom in these areas, especially developing countries.
Yeah.
This is where, you know, in developing countries, that's where you see the population peak. And then, interesting enough, that's where you see also economic activities also peaking up. And now when you look at most developed countries, for example, you know, their economic projection is not looking very good. The economic projection is not looking very good in terms of growth. And also, interesting enough, you see that their replenishment in terms of workforce, which also basically factors into childbirth, is also declining. It seems like economic growth and population growth are running congruent to each other at this point. Which again brings us back to one thing. It's okay. If we are going to build an infrastructure, it's going to need people to maintain it. It's going to need people to run it.
Definitely.
Now, the idea of AI taking over is still one of those very debatable subjects to this day. And we don't know for sure what the, you know, the negative or the positive impact is going to be. Take, for example, for the, for the next 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's something, of what we learn as we go. But what is apparent and very observable, even not by an expert eye, is what's happening as we speak in developed countries.
Yeah.
There are, a lot of countries have to, are highly dependent right now on immigrant labor.
Yep.
Because they just don't have the population to maintain the economy. Well, here's the thing. Take, for example, if the Italian Prime Minister Mattei plan works, and then employment is created in the countries where these immigrants are coming from, what do you think is going to happen to countries like the UAE? Their economies are toast. Yeah, but
they still have oil. Those guys get a subsidy from their oil. They don't have to work. They sit with the migrant populations there.
I know that part. Which is why I'm gonna say the UAE does not have to worry about that because the Mattei plan working in the next 5-10 years. Yeah, right. look, that's just the reality on the ground.
But what's her name? Maloney tried to fit it into the EU plan.
I know that.
Yeah.
But well, we both know that when that money.
But the German plan is now being worked here in Namibia and in Tanzania.
And in
South Africa.
As soon as that money arrives, someone is going to Mozambique it back to Switzerland. But at the point, and then we are back to square one. But
no one is Mozambiquing that money, bruh. The Europeans are serious. Anyone who still says green hydrogen is a hoax, these guys are serious.
You know what's painful for me when it comes to the whole Mozambique example, among a lot of other African examples.
Yeah.
I would have used a Namibian example, but I don't have bodyguards.
Yeah.
But look, the thing is, the fact that we need to be babysat to build our economy is very painful for me.
No, the fact that it's painful for me, it's not the part of babysitting. The babysitting is related towards meeting the targets. So we are being micromanaged, if people don't know this.
Yeah.
In a manner, we are being micromanaged.
So in other words, if you are not micromanaged, you are going to run everything into your private bank accounts.
No, Helmut, stop fast forwarding the thing. The micromanagement is about deliver, deliver, deliver. Hence the reason why, if you look at the Samoa Agreement, because we have to talk about the Samoa Agreement again. We didn't talk about it last year because I didn't have the text. I couldn't find the agreement online.
Mm.
I did find the agreement.
Congratulations.
Yeah. But this is not after the fact, after people have signed to the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got that report for us in our planning. If you go and look at that report, the EU makes it categorically clear. They feel responsible to work in collaboration with the Caribbean, with Africa, and with the Pacific Island nations. And in that scope, they take responsibility for upgrading us. So I don't know how you guys want to hear that particular sentence, but it literally says it like that. You can find that explainer on a lovely website by the EU on the internet where they literally say the EU uplifts these three zones, the Samoa Agreement. Now, This then overlaps into the question mark you ask of when we did the Commonwealth thing. What is the use of the Commonwealth? Because it now seems that when the Commonwealth ministerial engagement took place here in Windhoek, was it May or was it April? In May or April, you and I, we asked the question, why does it look like the Commonwealth of countries is now trying to spur up try to establish a space whereby there is cross-continental trade or enhanced cross-continental trade between all these Commonwealth countries. And at the base of it, the particular linkage of obviously the former master of these territories, the United Kingdom, still having access to this particular trade. Then you go look at the discussion of the South-South that we had yesterday. And you've got to look at these things in these three aspects, dear listeners. Because we ended off, obviously, with the AU discussion that Africa is trying to achieve. And in the SADC discussion, the Lobito Corridor development, which is a more micro scenario. If you look at all these levels as they flow and how they position themselves, you can literally see, firstly, there's a new scramble for Africa. Duh, obviously.
Yeah,
Economically. And
look, this one is somewhat self-imposed, because if you don't want to run your house, someone is going to do it for you.
Yeah, and it's happening already.
Commercial break.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Windhoek Original, or Windhoek Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back to Home Run. The time is 15 minutes past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And before we continue, let's take a live read.
Velvice University, new short courses that are available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Science. Program is the Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution. Admission requirements are Grade 12 Senior Certificate or an equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English. Or a grade 11 certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus a 2 years relevant industry experience that is required. The course cost is $5,500 Namibian dollars. Application period is 1 August to 31 August 2025. And for more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462 or email admissions@wu.edu.na, Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So we come back, guys, from the quick ad break.
Yeah, we are back. Look.
Of course we're back.
Yeah, I know. Look, micromanagement. Yeah. Where is the micromanagement coming in? And this is, I think, I think this is one of those things that makes me, proud of us, because I think it's an elephant in the room that no one wants to face. Look,
the cooperation or the presence of the partner?
No, the money. The control of an institution, or more like the control of something that is set up and built to run for an extended period of time, is going to be dominated in terms of control by who is investing the most money in it.
Yeah.
There are no two ways around it.
Oh, I had such a debate again today. Someone still does not understand. If you show up with the 300 million for the seismic survey,
and the only thing you're adding to it is a 10 bucks.
Or even just registering the company name. I'm sitting with the land.
Yeah, I've put in the effort. Unfortunately, I'm one of those people that don't understand how the financial world works.
Yeah.
And I just try to sort of like go through the basics that I can comprehend. And believe me, it's a very complicated world for those of us that are not, learned to basically understand that. But here's the thing. For publicly traded companies, What would happen if you just show up, well, you know, on a, you know, Johannesburg, New York, whatever stock exchange, and then pick a specific company, you run that company, and then you're just handing over, you know, shares left, right, and center. What's going to happen, you know, to your shares?
There's going to be one guy secretly buying up all the other shares to become the majority shareholder.
Yeah.
In your company. Hence, sometimes described as the, what do they call that thing in America? An aggressive takeover. Whereby they build up a strong position,
yeah,
and then come to a shareholders meeting saying, I got all these shareholders certificates. Here we go. But here's the thing, Helmut. Before you even get to those platforms,
yeah,
the JSE will ask you, show us how good your company is before you get up here. They will ask you. I don't know what happens here in Namibia at the NSX, but I have heard at the JSE, they ask you. They ordered you.
Look, someone explained to me what's you know shareholding, using one of the best example that made me, you know, sort of like memorize the basics that you know, because he used one of the best learning you know example that I can never forget.
Mm.
He used pizza as an example. The thing is, if you look at you know, the slices that pizza is sliced in. It's kind of difficult to find a Dimbombo example, but anyway, let's.
Are we talking about like the guys that used to contribute for lunch on university for the chips, the rush, the chips, the bread, and the coke?
Yeah. Now let's
who can eat them?
Yeah, let's structure the myth. Unfortunately, in the corporate world, that's exactly how it's done.
Who can,
the one who pays the most?
Yeah.
Gets to take the most.
Yeah.
So if you are paying the least, you can write as much constitution as you want.
You can go to as many public engagements and
oh, you can do that.
Yeah.
You can pray fast, holy water, blah, blah, blah. We talked about water cycle and evaporation, but anyway.
Yeah.
The point is, you need to put in the investment.
Mm.
Unfortunately, unless, I'm not an expert, so speaking under correction here, but that's how I've come to understand, that's how the world of, you know, the corporate world works. The more money you put in terms of investment, obviously the more risk you are taking. If everything tanks, you stand the most to lose.
No, but here's the thing. You will implement with that increased investment,
yeah,
you will implement more guardrails around your investment.
Yeah.
Even though you own the biggest stake,
uh-huh,
or a bigger stake,
uh-huh,
you will still say, I want as much security around my investment.
Yeah.
Because I still want to find my return on investment avenue.
Mm-hmm. So bottom line is the more you put in, the more you demand out of it.
Yeah.
Pangelo Mining, I looked it up after one that we decided to start with $1 million.
Again, you looked up.
I decided to go back to my, you know, economic Bible. Not only is it just the Namibian version, it's excellent. Now, the thing is, I think when we look at it from that, we are going to understand, especially if we're talking about ownership. And ownership is going to speak into self-determination. Again, like, like Paul Kagame, said in one of the event earlier this year, we can't keep talking about we want self-determination, we want to rule our own countries, and then turn around and then create the environment that does not make that happen. You can't, if you want to run your own country, invest into the core economic infrastructure, or basically, political or governmental that runs that country.
Mm.
Otherwise, then anyone that's going to, anyone that's putting money in it is obviously going to come asking for a cake.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Now, the thing is, when it comes to, when it comes to the family discussion now, this is where you see what is, you see that, the more we become dependent, the more, the more policies are going to be made that we really don't have a lot of standing ground with regards to opposing. If they are changing policies, for example, I'm not sure if the Bretton Woods institutions have changed the whole structural adjustment policies or something. Now, what that means, structural adjustment policies more often impact the workforce.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you're going to now have a lot of people that are out of their workforce. Now, I think the easiest example to use would be, the fish rot scandal that we're dealing with. you have a lot of people that are now out of their jobs. Now, imagine the situation those poor men and women were put in.
Mm.
Yeah. They had they had a lot of expenses to pay, only to wake up one day and find out that, you're going to have to figure out a plan B for your kids to school, for your mortgage, for your car, and all these things, because, well, this company is closing because someone upstairs in the chain of command, well, couldn't just, keep their hands to themselves. Now the situation we are sitting with is, even if you were making plans, for example, even if you are making plans, you had already two kids and you are making plans to have, maybe you wanted to have two more.
Mm.
If you are put in a situation like that, you are definitely going to put those plans on hold.
Yep. The other scenario is also, Helmut, we sometimes see the mismatching of economic standards in the country.
The mismatching is everywhere.
This report starts in its chapter 1 describing a scenario of the peaking, the next sentence after where I ended, where they cited that 1 in 4 people currently live in a country, 1 in 4 people of the 8 billion across the world currently live in a country where the population size is estimated to have already peaked. So the country might have reached its highest population size already. They then go on to say, the result will be societies as we have never seen it before. Communities with larger populations of older people, smaller shares of young people, and possibly smaller workforces. Hence the reason why AI has become so aggressive. AI adoption has become so aggressive. You can see that the AI planners have already taken this into consideration, because they possibly went and looked at a scenario of, what if there are too few skilled people or trained people to work in the economy that we currently have in the US? And then they expanded that, obviously, to the world. Now, let's for once sit with the discussion, Helmut. The very popular statement that many event participants at, high-level platforms love to use when it comes to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We'll sit with the youngest population in this scenario. We'll sit with the biggest working population at that scenario. We'll sit with this. We'll sit with that. All I'm hearing is about possibly, not definite.
Not certainly. Like
not
we
certainly.
Are going to.
Definite stuff. Because I'll tell you this, Helmut, and I've observed it already in Namibia. There are so many young women who are coming out more publicly and saying, I'll probably have one kid and I'll stop there. Unless you marry me.
You know what? You know.
And then the guy says, nah, I don't want to marry. I still want to, be spreading my oats. I'll
play the field.
Until 35 or until 40. And then the woman says, sharp, I'll move on.
Like, you know why that whole, where we will sit with the youngest population is very contradictory to what's taking place on the ground?
Yeah.
Africa right now has is one of the continents with the largest young population.
Right now, already.
How many of them are in Africa? How many of them are begging to leave? How many of them have already left? How many of them are planning to leave? You are not sitting with any.
Yeah. We're not sitting with a certain number.
No, you're not.
Yeah. It's a constant fluctuating number.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you know what? Those ones that are staying, as soon as they reach, the age of 12, you start giving them an AK give them an AK-47. They're dead before they're 15.
Yeah.
So now that myth of we will sit with a, that's very political. There's not a lot of number over what's happening to the young population right now.
Mm.
That's going on. It's just one of those things of wearing a fancy suit and then crossing your fingers and hoping no one has any question.
Or has any data.
Yeah. And also, I may have given a few politicians last year a trick of how to get out of, tricky questions. You just give your driver, extra, amount on his salary and tell him that anytime there's a difficult question, tell them we're in a hurry and put the car in gear 3 before starting, leave dust out to show that we,
To make the case of
urgency. To make the case
of urgency. Sorry.
Yeah. You can just forward them to my office. We are
going
to answer
them. And then the PA says, yeah, I know, you send WhatsApp. And then you're like, I don't have your number. Don't worry, just send by WhatsApp. Never to be seen again.
Never.
Never.
Never, ever. So for me, it's debatable. It's highly debatable that we are going to sit with the youngest population. You know why?
Mm.
One of the reasons is in developed countries, their population is declining. You know what that means? More opportunities for a potential workforce. That's a magnet. The very same magnet that we are seeing from rural to urban.
Mm.
The next thing we know, we will be dealing with a declining population especially with regards to the workforce population that developed countries are going through without having developed. Why? It's because they all moved. So unless home is made to feel like home, which is why we have runaway kids. I think one of the question that I think, that's worth asking is, on average, you're the statistics guy and the math guy here, on average, how much does it cost to raise one kid? We're talking about from prenatal all the way to college.
That statistic, when I was back in university, not with my second degree, with my first qualification, a diploma. That statistic was standing in the 2000s at 1 million.
Huh?
Yeah. A parent spends at least 1 million over the course of like 18 or 19 years raising one child.
Multiply that by 5.
5 million, Ellen.
Ask yourself if you have the money.
No, but the parent won't see it like immediately.
Yeah.
Ad break, guys.
Do you want to stand a chance of winning a 500 Namibian dollar gift voucher courtesy of ShopRite USA? Then simply tell us, what is the ShopRite Namibia website? Send your answers in a WhatsApp message to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. Tune in this Friday from 1:45 to hear if you are this week's lucky winner. You save, I save, we all save at USAVE.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. And if you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helm and Dwight on Eagle FM. So back to the question of the question to deal with here is general question on average.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to raise a child from prenatal care?
Up to
all through college.
So,
you know, until you attend their graduation party.
Yeah. You shared this thing just now with me.
Yeah.
2024, a year old, né?
Yeah.
So we probably also have to adjust the quantity, the total amount here.
Yeah.
With some sort of inflationary aspect, which would be 10% in most cases. Helmut, this guy mentions 3 million here. 550,000 rand. In South Africa, it's a South African financial planner that's obviously using South African context.
Yeah.
550,000 rand for the first 6 years of the child's life. Between 640 to 880,000 rand for primary school in South Africa. Then you've got up to 1 million rand just for high school. And a 3-year degree in South Africa may cost you a good 660,000. I know about the last one, the South African university degree, because my brother, I did some sums on the one child he had on a South African university in, what's the one's name in Pretoria? Tux, University of Pretoria, for the law program, the law degree, and it was a 4-year degree, 200,000 per year. And you have to sign, it's like a, what's the thing's name? It's like a credit agreement you're signing. You, the parent, you, the guardian, you're signing a credit agreement.
And as you can imagine, these numbers are based on what is considered, decent primary education, decent secondary education, decent tertiary education. You're not just
The lowest.
You're not just going the lowest. You're like, you know what? Ah.
Perceived. So this is an average estimation.
Yeah.
So you're not going the lowest. There is the highest range.
You're not
range.
Going the highest, yeah.
There is,
you're not going boarding school.
Yeah. The 880,000 is probably boarding school / private school.
Yeah.
But the mid range is that 650, 640 for the high school. And the million, the 600,000 is definitely, like I indicated now, university, at least 3-year degree. But if it's like a law degree, which is a 4-year thing, you, the guardian, the parent, you're paying 800,000. Now imagine if you've got 5 kids times 3, Helmut. You're paying 15 million rand. 15 million grotes. And I'm talking about like gigantic grotes, you know. There are some seriously big Hendrik Witbois that you're paying. It's a lot of money.
Look, it's not rocket science.
That's why a lot of people just want to do homeschooling in many cases. My bro, you're going to go look after the cattle. Just go there.
Yeah, but the biggest problem is with the upcoming technological advancement. If you raise them up for just looking after cattle, they are not going to be able to participate in a lot of economic activities that are going to come with the technological goal that we have in mind as a country. Yeah. And especially the industrial aspect of it. Now the technical aspect of it is even about to become more complicated because of the significance, presence, of machines, and most of which are not mechanical.
Well, this guy is also mentioning weird things here, Helmut, like.
For example?
Swimming lessons that could be 500 rand. I know, there's swimming.
Extramural activities.
There's swimming lessons here, right?
You know, right next to us.
Right next to us, in our studio that's, I know it's 4,000 or 1,000 bucks per kid or something like that, or per session or per month or whatever. It's 500 is not that. That's not the price.
Look, man, where I come from, swimming is free. A little risky, but.
Swimming is free. No hal. We paid for swimming to gain access to the swimming pool in Rehoboth. It was known as the Rehoboth Spa, the Rio Spa.
Really?
We paid $5 to get into the swimming pool. And there you are gallivanting.
Yeah, the only price I had to pay to learn how to swim is look carefully and make sure there is no crocodile nearby and problem solved.
Of course.
And your instructors are your cousins and those guys are mean.
And if they don't know that you are there, then they go like, okay, you're not there. He probably went home.
Yeah. So, on average, if you just take out all those fancy stuff, because, if you're just sticking to things that you need. Yeah. Now, if you're looking, and I think that's where schools now become somewhat very, difficult to attend, because most of the, what I classify, what I like to call as fancy schools has a lot of these extra programs, like piano this, swimming that. Now, your child is the one that will only be leaving the class and go straight home, and they can't participate in a lot of extra programs because, well, you don't have the money. That will basically force you to go, Lewis Hamilton's father way
of putting up. I'm not going to work 5 jobs.
Of putting up extra,
Just for the boy, just for the kid to drive go-karting. I'm not going
to. And you know why that is actually very hilarious to think about? You are working 5 jobs to pay someone
to train you
to turn corners at 200 kilometers an hour. So one wrong turn.
No, but here's the thing, Lewis was put into an academy.
Yeah.
And in that academy, they obviously then whittle out, the good talents.
Yeah.
And then when Lewis, because Lewis and Nico, is it Nico Rosberg? Him and Nico Rosberg were buddies since academy days. When they started, Rosberg's dad comes from a slightly well-established position. In comparison to Hamilton's dad. Hamilton's dad, I think, isn't he a male nurse or a nurse or something like that? His core profession, because he did other jobs. The other jobs were like delivery jobs and stuff like that. At one stage, he was doing 3 jobs at once. Just to pay for Hamilton's lessons and education and training.
Yeah, because Formula One is expensive. Yeah.
So technically what he was paying for was for the ecosystem around Hamilton to be as conducive as possible. So we're talking about the trainer, the trips there, to attend all. Because remember, progression is about you are in a league system, age per age group, and you have to progress in training every year. And then they obviously went into... When he became 17 or 18, then obviously he now got channeled into the big boy structures.
Yeah.
Because F1 is the top. There's F2. Then there's another one. Don't worry about the electric Grand Prix circuit.
Uh-huh.
But there was a smaller one. It's a smaller car. It's bigger than a go-kart, but it looks like a go-kart. There was such a car. For here, if you're 18, 19, 20. 21, they're about.
Yeah.
Before you get into F2, and then there's F3, F2, and F1. So the whole F1 scenario has a tiered positioning even. So it's like the academy process that they've got in Europe for footballers. Messi was in the under 12s or the whatever. Then he was bumped up, to the under 15s. Under 15s, he gets bumped up. But at every level, Barcelona is looking after you. So you go to the Barcelona school. You eat every day in the cafeteria. And then you do training. So if you ever engage with any of those athletes, Helmut, they have no other experience in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't learn how to work in a garden. Like some of our footballers here have to learn how to be the goat herder and then show up to play football at 3 o'clock the afternoon.
Yeah. It's not like they have a choice.
And in between running from, being the goat herder to getting to the football pitch, his practice session has been achieved there for the day because he had to run from here to get here. It's not like that. Those weird things only happen in Africa. That's it. In other places of the world, they know how to structure an activity into an economic function. So Messi was born at the age of 12. His dad moved with him. His family moved with him from... Is it Rosario or was it, what's the town's place in Argentina? They moved together from Argentina to go live in Barcelona, the city of Barcelona. So technically, Messi was inadvertently already a Spanish international. He could have played for Spain. He could have played for Spain, Helmut. But he was looked after since the age of 12 because of that hormonal issue he had. One of the reasons why Messi is so short. It's because he's got a deficiency in a particular hormone that allows his body to grow. So it could only release. He had to take specific medication that was super expensive at the time, and Barcelona said, "Yeah, we'll watch the medical bill. It's ours. Just stay with us." So if you want to know what actual formalized child trafficking looks like. The modern football market.
Formalized child trafficking.
No, because it's child. How do you buy a 12-year-old, Helmut? Is that not
child formalized child trafficking?
Is that not child trafficking? How do you buy it? And then
there's consent of parents, so.
Yeah, the guardians have to come with. And then the whole family is relocated to Spain.
Yeah.
And then the kid is formally in the academy. Since the age of 12. In your academy. He moved from Independiente. I remember the Argentine team's name, from Independiente to it's not Vélez Sarsfield, but he moved from Independiente to Barcelona. So, if people don't know what this particular scenario looks like, it's these functions that the modern day couple, the man, the woman are seeing, are impediments to having a comfortable life because. Oh, Helmut, this is the argument I actually forgot at the start of our discussion.
Uh-huh.
So, all those testimonies in that first chapter of this report, and obviously as we've digressed greatly in another direction, also on the notion in terms of the statements that I made, Africa will be here, Africa will be here, and Africa will have this, and Africa will have that. Here's the biggest discussion I'm bringing back to my uncle's particular starting point at that stage when he gave us that testimony. In the US and in the Western countries, in Europe specifically, there's most great discourse happening between the Gen Zs and the baby boomers. Because the baby boomers are telling the Gen Zs, ah, you guys are lazy. You guys don't know what hard work is. And I've heard those sage statements and sentences here in Namibia, in Windhoek also. Yeah, you are lazy. You guys don't know what hard work is. And you don't know what this and this and that is. However, you see ever increasing evidence of it's either for you to gain a successful life in Namibia. Ne? Let's say Namibia. Most instances, it's either through an aspect of corruption that takes place. It's either an aspect of favoritism, aspects of nepotism, aspects of elitism coming through, popping up and, you know, obviously permeating through. And then the rest of the other parts of the economy is left up to the rest of us plebeians. And then comes the other, the lower economic status, Namibians, below that, below us, you know, that then have to compete for other scenarios.
Yeah.
When you see these scenarios, then you realize, like the one guy that I follow on YouTube, the professor, the accounting professor, who literally, he literally says, neoliberal economics is rubbish. They don't know. They don't account for the capturing of an economic segment, meaning when you've got like really nefarious activities like Microsoft, because Microsoft is most an ultimate monopoly.
Oh, a big one.
A big one. The only other competitor to Microsoft is Apple. And Apple literally says, we use our platform for our hardware. We make the hardware, plus we make the platform.
For the hardware.
For the hardware. But then if you find any other hardware maker, they're told, you must have Microsoft preloaded. It's an out-and-out, uncompetitive situation. Ad break.
At ShopRite, we're celebrating 35 years of lower prices with unbeatable deals. Let's mark the occasion with savings on essentials like 2 kg nice rice, parboiled rice for just $39.99. 250 grams Nescafe Ricoffee instant coffee, only $69.99. Valid until 17 August 2025. Don't miss out on these deals. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust, always. Stand to win your groceries for free at ShopRite. Buy any three participating products. Find the unique code on your till slip. WhatsApp it to us and see if you're a winner. Plus, there are instant daily prizes to be won. Only at ShopRite.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Ah, only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back to Home Run, and we are here until the hour of 6. That means we sign out and leave you in the hands of David in 14 minutes.
Yeah.
So before I chime in with, you know, with page...
With the generational...
With page 24 of this report.
So, it's becoming ever more apparent, Helmut, that as, for example, Namibian society moves forward, guys, and you will see these things happen a lot more, ever more.
With time, yeah.
With time, even in the next year, in the rest of the other, the rest of this year that's left, you'll realize that certain things are becoming a lot more obvious and apparent. You will see similarities. And every time when you speak to the older generations, you ask them, how quickly was it for you to get a job? How quickly was it for you to get access to
what were the requirements?
The land. To build a house, what were the affordability components? How easy was it for you to get your license? Because I'll, do you know what's another thing, Hamid, that I love hammering on?
Yeah.
Just go and measure how many Namibians your age, ne, don't have a license or cannot drive properly.
Yeah.
They know what the car is. They know how the car functions.
Yeah.
They don't have a license and they can't drive properly. Go and ask them. Hence the reason why I'm so fixated on removing the burden of transport.
Yeah.
From us, the everyday user. Remove that burden from us. Because there's going to be Namibians that won't have the money to ever even buy a Dangi Botswana. They won't have the money. And for us to even assume from a position that people are financially equal, that's the one of the biggest fallacies that will ever exist in this country. So, just for me to leave on the last particular point, the generational divides will become ever more obvious, ever more harsher, ever more more impactful. And yeah, you will see it. I mean, you can look at the history of, for example, various neighborhoods in Windhoek. Kleine Cooper, Simbabasia, the extensions of Kommersdal, Ochumise, Rocky Crest. Look at them, Helmut. Mm-hmm. And if you ever know someone in each one of them, go and ask them what was the price of land
back then
when they bought the property. Not the house. You know, because that means it was resold to them. Someone else sold it to them.
Yeah.
When they got access to the property. What was it back then? What was the average cost to build and so forth? You will have a completely different picture from today. Completely different. But yeah, you were still saying, Helmut.
It turns out, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to old generations calling the younger generation lazy, that has been going on for a very long time. 2000 years ago, Socrates was quoted saying the same thing, calling the young generation, the generation that was young 2000 years ago, he was calling them weak and lazy, that his generation was the peak of mankind.
Oh, he and his brothers, the philosopher.
2000 years ago.
And he was a nobleman.
He was. It's calling, you know, this is someone who was, really cross, really cross to, very close to what you described during the Roman times as, as patricians.
Mm.
And now the plebeians were basically like an afterthought in these economies.
Mm.
And now I know that when it comes to the codification of the laws, the laws that we, that we even use today, we give a lot of credit to Justinian the First, but he codified them for political purposes because he wanted to, to get himself in good books with the plebeians, because when he came to power, these laws were not written down, and a bunch of guys in power were just using it whenever it suited them.
Mm.
So he saw that the majority this time, this we're talking about 530 something,
yeah,
AD. So he comes to power, then he calls for the codification of what is called the 12 tables. He codified that because of the pressure from people who were, well, just like you and me, because they felt like they were at the tail end of everything that was taking place in the country. They didn't have anything to say. At least they didn't have a legal standing every time they tried to make any point. So Justinian the First, get out of here. So it has always been up to ordinary people to bring about the change that they want to society. Because, that makes a lot of sense, because if I'm in a high up there in the political sphere, and I'm comfortable, why would I want anything to change?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You're the one that want to change. Well, call for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to calling each other lazy, it turns out we've been doing that for the past 2000 years at least. That's how, according to, as far as the records go. So you can imagine the Homo sapiens were telling Neanderthals the same thing. But when you just try to get anyone that understands the mathematics and statistics when it comes to child rearing, and ask them to help you crunch the numbers of how much it costs to raise a child, one, and because then from there then you can just be multiplying by 2, 3, 4, 5, or depending how many kids you have, and then you realize that whatever number you had in your head when you look into your income, you'll be like, I was gonna go for 5, but looking at the numbers and factoring in inflation, because you're not going to have all 5 of them in 1 year, unless you, but congratulations, superpower, that's not that going is to
still end. Impossible.
Look,
it is possible, but it still is impossible.
Yeah, it is. I know.
If you take it one by one, it's impossible.
It is.
but weird scenarios have happened.
Now, the thing is, the numbers, if you, and every parent basically want the best for their kids.
Mm.
Let me rephrase that. Every normal parent want the best for their kids. They want them to, you know, they want their kids to go to the best kindergarten. They want them to have, to be in the most comfortable place every time that they come home. They want to, you know, go to from school, home to school or home to wherever, whatever activities they're participating in.
Yeah.
Every parent want the best for their child. So no parent will just comfortable sit there and then start making mediocre plans for the future of their child.
Mm.
So that's where I think the average calculations now comes in. You don't want to go, you know, Switzerland high institutions type. You just want, one that will give them access to, put them on demand.
Yeah.
In terms, with regards to having access to the job market. Now, that means if you do the math that way, you are going to realize that Africa, in the next 10 to 20 years, we are going to have a lot of problems. And when you factor in, African diaspora, you are also looking at the reality on the ground here. No one will just leave Namibia, go to the UK, Germany, France, wherever they find themselves, and just decide to, I just have this small job here. And therefore, I'll just decide to have 5 kids. No! First of all, you are in a foreign country.
And it'll be even more difficult on that side, that having kids.
That is a logistical nightmare that you'll be dealing with. The level of paperwork that you'll have to go through.
Yeah.
For you to pull that off.
Yeah.
For one. Actually, you have to jump through hoops to pull through those paperworks for yourself.
Mm.
Imagine having a family.
Yep. I mean,
so
the report, Helmut, actually does the best itself. Obviously, I know that the UNFPA guys, they know their job. It's just the way in terms of how they position the particular question, meaning what is the real fertility crisis?
Yeah.
Are we talking about population booms, population declines? What is it? You are right, Helmut, to say in the next 15 years from today, Africa will have a problem.
We're going to be having a whole different discussion.
We're going to have an ugly problem. And if you're going to have, like in a Cameroonian context, where
the guy that parted the Red Sea is still the president.
Yeah. The guy that helped establish the Ten Commandments is still standing for president later this year in elections. I mean, then you, as a continent, we can just forget everything. In an Ugandan context, Homeboy Museveni is, still doing Museveni things, Daughter in charge of the church, son in charge of the army, wife. What? His wife was also has a position.
No, Minister of Education.
Daughter is in charge of what? One that's also the pastor.
Holy, yeah.
No, she's in charge of something. She's also a ministerial position.
No, that I did not know. I know that the son is in charge of the military, the mother is in charge of education, and he's in charge of the executive branch, and,
somewhere there's a brother and a cousin.
You bet.
Somewhere there's a minister without a portfolio, but he's a minister.
You know what? So the video that was trending of the guy that was, being paraded around, who's running for office in a not very healthy condition. I think he's fairly young young. You know, the reason why he's in that condition is not because of his age, even though age is one of those things that would basically look at, make people go like, maybe you should look into retirement. I think he suffered a medical problem.
Hint, hint. Maybe you should.
You should look into retirement.
Hint, hint, go in that way, that door. Ne?
Not
greener pastures.
Mo Ibrahim in 2018 Ibrahim Awards, told them, it's only us who are running for the next office at 95. And his exact words were like, are you guys crazy or what?
But here's the thing about Mo Ibrahim. He's a African billionaire living somewhere else.
But he had a point. You're 95 running for office.
Yeah, he's an African billionaire sitting somewhere else in another part of the world.
Yeah.
And then we get measured from there here.
One of the examples he used was that Obama in the US is a president. If I was in Kenya, he would be driving a bus. that guy was low key taking over my job. Yeah. But look. look, he had a point.
Yeah, he did.
Because you have a lot of qualified individuals like, and Obama is one of those, I mean, Homeboy is a genius. He has like advanced degrees, like several advanced degrees from, I think, Columbia University and Harvard. And that's him and the wife.
Yeah.
So when you look at, now I think this is also going to bring us to, to sort of like evaluate how to make plans, like family planning. Now, I know that more often when we talk about family planning, we're just talking about contraception. But we're supposed to sort of like, now I'm talking about family planning here in a literal sense. I think this is where I think, a lot of education is needed for a lot of us. And that's, most of us just start looking for money for the child to go to college when they, when they pass high school. That's when we are making the plans. But you're going to fork out $800,000 in 1 year?
Just for high school?
No, for college. So the lifestyle we have adopted in terms of child rearing, and actually that's where the world is headed economically, is it requires planning in advance. So that means, if we are going, if I'm going to make plans that, I'm going to have, I'm going to have 5 kids. I'm going to have to first look at my finance. Can I afford to, one of them is going to be, take for example, they're going to be born, you're just crossing your fingers somewhere in the process here and hoping that, they're born, one or two, 1 year, what a photocopy machine, 3 years apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you are just looking at, by the time that, this, by the time that this one turns 3, you'll be expecting another one.
Yeah.
The math that you'll be doing on your calculator will make you reconsider. Because every time that I go shopping, I like to take myself through the, the baby milk formula. I went there with one of our colleagues, a lady one day, and she was telling me, well, on average, depending on the age of that child, on average, you need at least 2 or 3 of these per month. I'm like, huh?
You're still worried about that. The disposable nappy.
Throw in that.
And the clothing. I mean, I had to look at my brothers going like, what? You had to pre-lay-by before the child was born? They said, yeah, Dwight. They had to open up clothing accounts. Nah? And they put money into it. So that when the baby is born, you are just accessing.
Look, man, I know, I think this is one of those things that takes us back to the example that you used that, why are things complicated these days? I used to go to school bare feet. That was then.
Yeah.
You can't show up in the class bare feet now. The teacher will be like, okay.
The teacher will call child services and report your parents.
And
then the police show up and counsel your parents.
Yeah, like,
and then your dad is going to feel humiliated because his number is now full of pride and ego. He's going to, yeah, no one will tell me how to raise my kids.
Well, you have got to be strong. That's how I went to school. Well, that was then.
Yep.
Now is a whole different time period. So some adjustments will really have to be made. And unfortunately for us,
those
adjustments are really expensive.
Oh, they need money. I had to explain to a guy just now before our show. that technically, in essence, this concept of money is not our concept in Africa.
And we highly embraced and adopted it, and congratulations.
Our lives are governed by it, our lives are run by it. But yeah, this, I mean, we are so advanced right now, we don't know what to do. You know, we're trying to give people jobs, but people need to eat today.
You know, the funny thing is that more often, every time that I, a lot of my lady friends, as you can imagine, like to talk about weddings and getting married, getting married.
Who's going to pay for those weddings?
Now, the plans, one thing I've observed is that the plans only go until honeymoon.
And then?
That's it. You know, I just, you know, dance on the floor in my white dress. I'm like, okay. Well, you do realize after dancing on the floor, honeymoon is baby making.
And homemaking.
Homemaking.
And then we go back to our everyday lives. We go to work.
Look, it's
you go to your work.
Look, it's an awesome thing. Yeah, but if you look at the budget.
And many of them will tell you, I want to be a stay-at-home wife. And you go like, in what world? In which country are you living? I know they've told you that, Helmut.
You have no idea.
And then you sit there squinting as the guy going like, what are you telling me? Who must go enslave himself to death every day?
Support.
Yeah, strong like bull.
Yeah.
I can't be strong like bull every day.
Like, I think we have, okay, look, I mean, if you, anyone that have, that's looking at the family from a 21st century perspective, everyone, you know, is obviously going to come to the same conclusion that it's costing more every day, and it's going to continue with inflation, obviously.
Yeah.
So, whatever plans everyone have in place, you know, any government has in place when it comes to incentivizing a family, they will really have to go all out.
Yep. They'll just have to. I'm really sorry. Look, unless we launch at like 50 lotteries in this year, each one with a potential to win 100 million each. I'm sorry, guys.
Look, every time we talk, we have discussions like this, I begin to think, I don't want to be in public office because the responsibilities are piled you.
No, you can be in public office. You just don't want to be the politician.
Sounds much easier. I mean, you just need a microphone that works, and then you lie and never come back again.
True.
Yeah. Well, we are 5 minutes into business and economic segment. Just something to think about. So the statistics is out there coming out of the international comparison, international statistics, and it basically shows why, like the direction we are headed as a species when it comes to population, that we are going to peak and then it will take a nose dive. And I think that nose dive is already happening in a lot of developed countries.
And on that note, dear listeners,
until tomorrow,
let's see each other again, same time, same place. Stay tuned for the rest of our programming. And enjoy the rest of your evening, your Thursday evening in our company.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the